Even the spells of expert healers would have been powerless. It was too late. Yennefer's spells were only exhausting her. Triss was amazed that the black-haired sorceress was holding out so long. She stopped being amazed when Yennefer fell silent halfway through the next magical formula and slumped down onto the cobbles beside the witcher. One of the dwarves swore again. The other stood with head lowered. Dandelion, still holding Triss up, sniffed. It suddenly became very cold. The surface of the lake, filled with fog like a sorceress's cauldron, became enveloped in mist. The fog rose swiftly, billowed over the water, and rolled onto the land in waves, enveloping everything in a thick white milk, in which sounds grew quieter and died away, in which shapes vanished and forms blurred. "And I once renounced my power," said Ciri slowly, still kneeling on the blood-soaked cobbles. "Had I not renounced it, I would have saved him now. I would have healed him. I know it. But it's too late. I renounced it, and now I can't do anything. It's as though I've killed him." The silence was first interrupted by Kelpie's loud neighing, then by Dandelion's muffled cry. Then they were all struck dumb. A white unicorn emerged from the fog, running very lightly, ethereally and noiselessly, gracefully raising its shapely head. There actually wasn't anything unusual in that. Everybody knew the legends, and they were unanimous about unicorns running very lightly, ethereally and noiselessly, and raising their heads with characteristic grace. If anything was strange, it was that the unicorn was running over the surface of the water, and the water wasn't even rippling. Dandelion groaned, but this time in awe. Triss felt herself being seized by a thrill, by euphoria. The unicorn clattered its hooves on the stone boulevard. It shook its mane, and neighed lengthily and melodically.
"Ehwarachwax," said Ciri. "I'd hoped you'd come."
The unicorn came closer, neighed again, tapped with a hoof, and then struck the cobbles hard. He bent his head. The horn, sticking out of his domed forehead, suddenly lit up with a bright glare, a brilliance that dispersed the fog for a moment. Ciri touched the horn. Triss cried out softly, seeing the girl's eyes suddenly lighting up with a milky glow, saw her surrounded by a fiery halo. Ciri couldn't hear her, couldn't hear anyone. She was still holding the unicorn's horn in one hand and pointed the other towards the motionless witcher. A ribbon of flickering brightness that glowed like lava flowed from her fingers. No one could tell how long it lasted, because it was unreal, like a dream. The unicorn, almost blurring in the thickening fog, neighed, struck its hoof, and shook its head and horn as though pointing at something. Triss looked. She saw a dark shape on the water under the canopy of willow branches hanging over the lake. It was a boat. The unicorn pointed again with its horn and quickly began to vanish into the mist.
"Kelpie," said Ciri. "Follow him."
Kelpie snorted and tossed her head. She followed the unicorn obediently. Her horseshoes rang on the cobbles for a while, then the sound suddenly broke off, as though the mare had taken wing, disappeared, dematerialized. The boat was beside the very bank, and in the moments when the fog dispersed, Triss could see it clearly. It was a primitively constructed barge, as clumsy and angular as a large pig trough.
"Help me," said Ciri.
Her voice was confident and determined. No one knew at the beginning what the girl meant, what help she was expecting. Dandelion was the first to understand, perhaps because he knew the legend, had once read one of its poeticized versions. He picked up the still unconscious Yennefer. He was astonished at how dainty and light she was. He could have sworn somebody was helping him carry her. He could have sworn he could feel Kaia's shoulder beside his arm. Out of the corner of one eye, he caught sight of a flash of Milva's flaxen plait.
When he placed the sorceress in the boat, he could have sworn he saw Angoulême's hands steadying the side. The dwarves carried the witcher, helped by Triss, who was supporting his head. Yarp and Zigrin positively blinked on seeing both Dahlberg brothers for a second. Zoltan Chive could have sworn that Caleb Stratton had helped him lay the witcher in the boat. Triss Merigold was absolutely certain she could smell the perfume of Litanade, also called coral. And for a moment, she saw amidst the haze the bright yellow-green eyes of Cohen from Ger Morhen. That was the kind of tricks played on the senses by the fog, the thick fog over Loch Escalot.
"It's ready, Ciri," the sorceress said dully. "Your boat is waiting."
Ciri brushed her hair back from her forehead and sniffed.
"Apologize to the ladies of Monte Calvo, Triss," she said. "But it can't be otherwise. I cannot stay when Geralt and Yennefer are departing. I simply cannot. They ought to understand. They ought to. Farewell then, Triss Merigold. Farewell, Dandelion. Farewell, all of you."
"Ciri," whispered Triss.
"Little sister, let me sail away with you. You don't know what you're asking, Triss. Will you ever..."
"For certain," she interrupted firmly. She boarded the boat, which rocked and immediately began to sail away, to fade into the fog. Those that were standing on the bank didn't hear even the merest splash, didn't see any ripples or movements of the water, as though it wasn't a boat, but an apparition. For a very short time, they could still see Ciri's slight and ethereal silhouette, saw her push off from the bottom with a long pole, saw her urge on the already quickly gliding barge. And then there was only the fog.
"She lied to me," thought Triss. "I'll never see her again. I'll never see her because... Vaisa Tereath Ip again. Something ends."
"Something has ended," said Dandelion in an altered voice.
"Something is beginning," Yarp and Zigrin chimed in.
A rooster crowed loudly somewhere in the direction of the town. The fog quickly began to rise. Geralt opened his eyes, irritated by the play of light and shadow through his eyelids. He saw leaves above him, a kaleidoscope of leaves flickering in the sun. He saw branches heavy with apples. He felt the soft touch of fingers on his temple and cheek. Fingers he knew. Fingers he loved so much it hurt. His belly and chest hurt. His ribs hurt. And the tight corset of bandages left him in no doubt that the town of Rivia and the three-fanged trident hadn't been a nightmare.
"Lie still, my darling," Yennefer said gently. "Lie still. Don't move."
"Where are we, Yen?"
"Is it important? We're together. You and me."
Birds, either greenfinches or thrushes, were singing. It smelled of grass, herbs and flowers, and apples.
"Where's Ciri?"
"She's gone away."
She changed her position, gently freeing her arm from under his head, and lay down beside him on the grass so that she could look in his eyes. She looked at him voraciously, as though she wanted to feast her eyes on the sight, as though she wanted to eat him up with her eyes, to store it away for the whole of eternity. He looked at her too, and longing choked him.
"We were with Ciri in a boat," he recalled. "On a lake. Then on a river. On a river with a strong current. In the fog."
Her fingers found his hand and squeezed it strongly.
"Lie still, my darling. Lie still. I'm beside you. It doesn't matter what happened. Doesn't matter where we were. Now I'm beside you, and I'll never leave you. Never."
"I love you, Yen."
"I know."
All the same, he sighed, I'd like to know where we are.
Me too,
said Yennefer, quietly and not right away.
And is that the end of the story? Galahad asked a moment later. Not at all, protested Ciri, rubbing one foot against the other, wiping off the dried sand that had stuck to her toes and the sole of her foot. Would you like the story to end like that? Like hell, I wouldn't. So what happened then? Nothing special, she snorted. They got married. Tell me. What is there to tell? There was a great big wedding. They all came. Dandelion, Mother Nennica, Yoller and Yurnaid, Yap and Zigrin, Vesemir, Eskel, Cohen, Melver, Angulem, and my missile. And I was there. I drank mead and wine. And Geralt and Yennefer, had their own house afterwards and were happy. Very, very happy. Like in a fairy tale. Do you understand? Why are you weeping like that, O Lady of the Lake? I'm not weeping at all. My eyes are watering from the wind, and that's that.
They were silent for a long time, and looked as the red-hot glowing ball of the sun touched the mountain peaks.
Indeed, Galahad finally interrupted the silence. It was a very strange story. Oh, very strange. Truly, Miss Ciri, the world you came from is incredible.
Ciri sniffed loudly.
Yes, continued Galahad, clearing his throat several times, feeling a little uncomfortable by her silence. But astounding adventures also occur here, in our world. Let's take, for instance, what happened to Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, or to my uncle, Sir Bors and Sir Tristan. Just consider, Lady Ciri, Sir Bors and Sir Tristan set off one day for the west, towards Tintagel. The road led them through forests, untamed and perilous. They rode and rode, and looked. And there stood a white hind, and beside it a lady dressed in black. Truly, a blacker black you couldn't even see in nightmares. And that comely lady, so comely you couldn't see a comelier one in the whole world. Well, apart from Queen Guinevere. That lady, standing by the hind, saw the knights, beckoned, and spake thus to them. Galahad. Yes? Be quiet. He coughed, cleared his throat, and fell silent.
They were both silent, looking at the sun. They were silent for a long time.
Lady of the Lake, I've asked you not to call me that. Lady Ciri. Yes? Ride with me to Camelot, O Lady Ciri. King Arthur, you'll see, will show you honour and respect, while I shall always love you and revere you. Get up from your knees at once. Or maybe not. If you're there, rub my feet. They're really frozen. Oh, thank you. You're sweet. I said my feet. My feet finish at the ankles. Lady Ciri, I haven't gone anywhere. The day is drawing to a close.
Indeed.
Ciri fastened her boot buckles and stood up. Let's saddle up, Galahad. Is there somewhere around here we can spend the night? I can see from your expression that you know this place as well as I do. But never mind, let's set off. Even if we have to sleep under an open sky, let's go a bit further into a forest. There's a breeze coming off the lake.
Why are you looking like that?
Ah, she guessed, seeing him blush. Are you imagining a knight under a filbert bush on a carpet of moss in the arms of a fairy? Listen, young man, I don't have the slightest desire.
She broke off, looking at his blushing cheeks and shining eyes, at his actually not bad-looking face. Something squeezed her belly, and it wasn't hunger.
What's happening to me? She thought. What's happening to me? Don't dilly-dally, she almost shouted. Saddle your stallion.
When they mounted, she looked at him and laughed out loud. He glanced at her, and his gaze was one of amazement and questioning.
Nothing. Nothing,
she said freely.
I just thought of something. On we go, Galahad. A carpet of moss,
she thought, suppressing a giggle.
Under a filbert bush, with me playing the fairy. Well, well. Lady Ciri?
Yes.
Will you ride with me to Camelot?
She held out her hand, and he held out his. They joined hands, riding side by side.
By the devil, she thought. Why not?
I'd bet any money that in this world a job could be found for a witcher girl.
Because there isn't a world where there wouldn't be work for a witcher. Lady Ciri, let's not talk about it now. Let's go.
They rode straight into the setting sun, leaving behind them the darkening valley. Behind them was the lake, the enchanted lake, the blue lake as smooth as a polished sapphire. They left behind them the boulders on the lakeside, the pines on the hillsides. That was all behind them. And before them was everything.
This has been a Hachette audio production of The Lady of the Lake, written by Andrzej Sapkowski, translated from the Polish by David French, read by Peter Kenny, executive producer Pandora White, directed and engineered by Mary Price, edited by Wolfgang Dienst. The Lady of the Lake is also available in print and digital formats from Orbit, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette Audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 1999 by Andrzej Sapkowski. English translation copyright 2017 by David French. Audio production copyright 2017 by Orion Publishing Group. All rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this audiobook without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the audiobook, other than for review purposes, please contact permissions at hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales is entirely coincidental.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.